Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the most magnificently aluminum-dumped island-chained paradise in the South Pacific, according to Netscape. My very special guest... I'm just joking, by the way. I don't follow Netscape. I don't even know what Netscape is. My very special guest is Dane Wigington, coming at us from the beautiful... rural hinterland of the United States, which is just about as lively as the US economy, meaning it's loaded up with a whole lot of toxic debt and it's kind of dying right in front of your eyes, but nobody tells you about it on mainstream media. Dane, welcome to the show.
Thanks,
buddy.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for everything you do for the common good, my friend.
Yeah, well, you know, we all do what we can, and it's not a choice, it's a lack of options.
At this point, there's so much going on. I hope people learn to prioritize. I know I see a lot of people doing a lot of things that matter in and of themselves, but the bigger picture has to be addressed. You know, if the ship is sinking, we have to deal with that first. And I hope a lot of people from a lot of other causes start to prioritize so that we can keep the boat itself afloat, i.e. planet Earth. Then we can deal with other issues as they come.
It becomes about movement building after a while, and I think the first thing that starts with the movement building is being able to move yourself. I wanted to ask you, actually, Dave, just a personal question, if I may. How long did it take you before you noticed geoengineering and researched into it? How long after the realization hit you did you actually start doing something about it?
As soon as I really... recognized it, my investigation started immediately. But I will say that from the time it was mentioned to me to the time I really recognized it was going on, there was a considerable span of time in there, because it just, like a lot of people, it didn't really fit in my reality. And that points out to me, Vincent, how difficult it is for most people to recognize this, because I'm extremely observant. I mean, when I'm driving down the road, for example, I'm looking at everything but the road, and I tend to notice everything around me, my surroundings. I mean, if anything's not right, if something's unusual, I notice it. And in this situation, even with my background in renewable energy and my love for the outdoors, it took a bit of a gap of time before I really looked up, recognized it, saw it. But the moment I did, you know, once you realize this is happening above you, it's certainly going to fall on you. The consequences are grave. And then the more investigation you do, the more dire it looks. And so, you know, from that moment on, my whole life's been on hold. It's been well over a decade now. And I'll continue in this vigil until our skies are clean and, or until I take my last breath.
Yeah, your last aluminium-laden breath. Hey, incidentally, did you know that Mount Shasta has a brand of water that they just released, and it got given the Tastiest Water of the Year awards or something like that? And all these chemtrail deniers are all over their page going, oh, it must be all that aluminium, barium and strontium in the water, isn't it? Yeah, and I'm sure when people commercially sell water, they don't run it through, you know, like a filter or something like that.
You know, it's interesting. I knew there was water issues going on up there, and they're trying to block that. People in Mount Shasta, which is a ways north of me, but yeah, I had heard something like that was going on. And now the water actually does where they, or I think they pull that water. It's gone through the mountain and come out in the bottom. There's a spring at the bottom that's very large. I think that's where they siphon that from, and that would likely purge a lot of those metals out. But we know for sure, with no speculation, that the snow on top of that mountain is packed with metals, period. We know it. So,
what were the tests at? They were something like 30 to 60,000 times normal aluminium levels or acceptable aluminium levels in the snow melt?
Like 61,000 times. The test off Mount Shasta, the highest test taken for aluminum by a U.S. Forest Service biologist, 61,000 parts per billion. There shouldn't be anything in there. According to hydrogeologists, we should have less than one ppb. That makes that 61,000 times higher than it should be. Action level, where you have really contaminated circumstances, EPA action level is 1,000 ppb, and that's 61 times over that. And that, you know, that action level is ridiculous. It's insanely high. It's just like the new quote-unquote safe radiation standards, which are ridiculously high. There is no safe level of radiation, yet they tell us there is. So there shouldn't be aluminum in the precipitation, period, unless you are in some sort of a Sahara thunderstorm where it picks up a lot of material from the ground. Shouldn't have anything in the storms that come from the Pacific Northwest. They're considered filtered locations because of the forested regions, and quite simply, metal doesn't belong there. We know the metals are recent occurrence because we've seen now a decline in aquatic insect life in Shasta, Siskiyou counties in Northern California of 90% because the streams are flowing with aluminum, Vincent. And now, you know, since I've last spoken to you, the state of California and the Department of Fish and Game has acknowledged on the record that indeed aluminum is running down the waterways. So I, in my last connection with the investigator for state water quality that's investigating this issue, she made it clear to me that they are not going to test precipitation, period. Not in the discussion, not in the agenda. You know, where do they think runoff comes from? So you can't find what you're not looking for, and that's the point.
Hear no evil, see no evil, and breathe no evil.
There you go. That's what we have.
Yeah. It comes down to this. If you're not prepared for the information, you're really not going to want to look at it because of the implications. It's scary, man, okay? Even a number of people that I've told about our interviews, Dane, have told me flat out that they're not going to listen to them. Why? Because just the prequel of what I give them and tell them that we talk about scares them so much that they don't want to investigate further. I think that's actually a natural, healthy human reaction. It's a way to protect yourself from undue trauma in a lot of ways. But in a lot of other ways, it can be the thing that actually causes your death.
Yeah, that's how I see it. And an example I've often given, because it's a clear and easy to understand example, if you find yourself standing in the middle of the interstate freeway, you're better off facing traffic. And at least you might be able to dodge. And that's how I see this situation. Any circumstance is best faced head on, period. And psychologically speaking, it's much more assuring when one just squarely faces whatever challenge they find themselves with. So people's attempt to hide from disturbing circumstances is only weakening their mental state, period. I hope more people realize this. When you turn and face the challenges that we're presented with squarely, that's the strongest psychological position you'll ever find in yourself.
And that's a general rule of life as well. It works as much as it does for bodybuilders as it does for corporate loan sharks.
It does. It does. There's simply no other healthy way to deal with what life throws at you. But we live in a society, especially here in the States. You know, I mean, I had the pleasure of spending some time in New Zealand, and as I mentioned to you before, I think off the air, I wish I would have migrated there. But here in the States, people have been sheltered from reality for so long that they almost don't even understand how to accept it. I mean, and for them, reality is, again, Walmart's open and the Big Macs are still being served up, and that's really their barometer of everything being normal in the world. And the stock market is being ridiculously pumped to the moon. It's absolutely the biggest card house imaginable at this point, and I think it's getting close to a colossal collapse. We must be close to that, but those few items can literally keep the majority of Americans believing that all is well in the world when it's anything but. Mm. And I think heads are going to be ripped out of the sand here very, very soon.
Hey, it's kind of like what if the canary was only capable of dying under certain poison chemicals before us, right? The canary in the coal mine, it's supposed to die if methane reaches it. But what if it's a different kind of gas? What if it's a gas that doesn't affect the canary very much at all, and everybody's dead, and it's still flapping around in its cage, waiting to be picked up? Isn't that what we're really talking about here, is that we're not really identifying the real warning signs? We're not even including real dangers in the brief to the public. It's almost like an overprotective parent wanting to stop their child from growing up so they can maintain possession over it for the rest of its life in its basement.
Well, your points are well taken, and I think they're accurate, and I think it's exactly what we have in many ways, in that, you know, the particular examples I gave earlier are sort of what, in this case, the American population perceives as the, quote, canary, and that canary is still flapping, and, you know, if these stores are open and still doing business, and the TV is just talking about its usual theater, that, you know, nothing seems to have changed. But in the meantime, all hell is breaking loose everywhere. I mean, from the geopolitical insanity that is so blatant at this point, from Ukraine and what's happening there. I mean, innocent civilians are being shelled and bombed. And thankfully, Putin is showing great restraint and trying to let America expose, and the NATO powers expose themselves for the terrorists that they are. And from those issues to the spraying overhead to the obviously completely manipulated market, but because the perception of reality in our artificially constructed paradigm of society is because that's still functioning and going on, people, they just can't snap out of it. You know, you stand in an aisle in a Walmart. You guys have Walmarts in New Zealand? You probably do, right?
Well, no, we don't technically have Walmart yet, but we've got all the equivalents. You know, we call Walmart the warehouse.
Well, I tell you what, Walmarts are so big, Vincent, that you could get lost in there for several days. And, you know, if you stand in an aisle in a Walmart and you look at the people meandering around, it's like you're in some kind of a zombie movie, and they just, I hate to be critical, but so many people clearly are not awake at the wheel, if you will, and that's going to change soon. They won't have a choice. I mean, right now, the drought situation in California is so cataclysmic, the heat is so intense, that it's killing orchards, mature orchards that are in the most fertile parts of the country. California supplies 50% of the nuts, fruits, and vegetables for the whole country, 50%. And these orchards are imploding. They are. I mean, there are some that look not as bad as others, but they all look bad. And the UV here, and you know, everybody talks about the UV in Southern Hemisphere, and I remember it was intense when I was in New Zealand. I don't know how bad it is down under now, but it's horrible here. You can't stand in the sun. And the spraying has been so nonstop in the northern hemisphere, that I believe the ozone situation is much worse here than there. And now we see, we have an article out in the last few days acknowledging yet again, Canadian government is absolutely, completely muzzling their scientists. Completely. They can't talk to any media without termination. And it's this way across the board. I've had NOAA scientists tell me, off the record, they're afraid to speak out about climate engineering. They know what's going on. They're literally petrified of what the repercussions would be. So it's a strange situation when you have a few clinically insane people at the top running the whole show and everybody else just sort of following suit. Talk to a government employee on Sunday who's connected with a very high-ranking Air Force colonel. And I know this man, this government employee, and I know he's credible. And he's been told in no uncertain terms that all the Air Force pilots know that they're engaged in this. They all know. It's just something they are told not to talk about, so they don't. Air Force pilots tend to be yes men. You know, they screen these guys very carefully. They don't want pilots flying around that might start thinking for themselves. So these guys tend to toe the line. And, you know, I can only hope that they wake up, find their courage, and realize what they're doing to their own citizens, their own family, their own children. I can only hope.
What are they being told? I mean, if you're a pilot and you were chemtrailing the area or geoengineering or whatever euphemism you want to throw out there, what do they tell them? What is the story?
Let's look at the Snowden documents for perhaps some insight onto that. I don't know if you saw, and many people tried to discredit it, but I believe it was authentic. Snowden did release some data on the geoengineering. Did you happen to see that?
No, I hadn't even heard of it.
He did. It got kind of suppressed really quickly, but
I mean, not in regard to geoengineering, I didn't. I mean, I know that Snowden released some documents, but I presumed it was just about government surveillance, etc.
No, on geoengineering. He did on geoengineering, and he showed restraint, and again, there was an effort, as we would expect, to try to immediately discredit that, but what he said he had for documentation was exactly what we'd expect a government document to say, and this is what he said the docs say, that if it were not, that geoengineering was the military's crown jewel. This is their premier element of all their operations. And what he said was if they were not fully engaged in these programs, the climate in the U.S. would spin wildly out of control within 1 year. Now, whether a person chooses to see any validity in that or not is beside the point. The point is that's exactly what we'd expect a government document to say. Snowden went on to say he did not release any further information because there were names on that information. He felt those people would be killed, and he's probably right. So if we look at what that government document said, go back to the pilots, what they're being told, that's what we believe they're being told. If you won't engage in these programs, the climate in the U.S. would disintegrate in a year. Now, the truth is the climate in the U.S. is disintegrating. Geoengineering is fueling the fire. And at this point, so much damage is done. If we can bring climate engineering to light and to a halt, we face a very ferocious climate system. It's been poked and prodded and cut and bruised, and it's in horrible shape right now. We have wheels turning that can't be turned off, and there's a lot of causal factors. Again, I'm not pretending that the climate engineering is the only source of damage to our biosphere, but it's certainly the biggest single causal factor mathematically. And so these pilots are being told, again, just like we would expect in Vietnam, that the pilots that sprayed their own fellow soldiers with Agent Orange, these pilots are being told they're doing something good, something to help the effort, something to help their fellow Americans. Couldn't be further from the truth.
You know, actually, I think they're being told to do something bad because it's the only choice you have to do any good, right? Is that called brainwashing, Mike? Is that what's really going on here?
In a sense, ultimately, I think the simplistic form of need-to-know basis that we know happens in the military, there's no big explanation there. It's these are your orders. It's for the common good. Your government would never do anything that wasn't. which we know to be completely
so,
untrue.
So hold on. I'm sorry to interrupt here, but does this mean specifically that the geoengineering program is a military program, or is it much like the modern U.S. military programs where basically most of it's done by private contractors and the military more or less just picks up the bill and tags it on the American people?
I think what you've just stated is absolutely true, but in discussion of the military pilots, which we know are involved too because we have film of C-17 Globemasters, KC-10s, KC-135, military aircraft spraying. So we know military is involved also. We have identified with ground tracking the Flight Tracker 24 commercial aircraft as well. And again, with those commercial aircraft, a lot of unknowns. We don't know if those are necessarily part of a commercial fleet or if they're painted or identified with those same
if I may,
markings.
Yes. Mike Rupert from thewilderness.com, he's no longer with us anymore. He committed suicide earlier this year. But
at least we're told he did. You know, who knows?
It appears very genuine. I've seen the aftermath videos with his friends and everything. His note was totally in his thing, and he'd called a number of people that night to.
I didn't see that, so I appreciate you sharing that with me. Anyway,
yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
I kind of miss him. I never met him or talked to him, but I miss him. Anyway, what he was telling me about was in 1999, I think, or was it maybe 2002, sorry, he did a documentary called The Truth and Lies, 9/11. Part of it was about CIA drug smuggling, and I'm sorry for the long-winded story, but there's a point to it. What he found out was that the U.S. Fire Service had purchased maybe 14 C-17s, big aircraft for the use of firefighting. And what the CIA does is, in order to run their drugs, they use those fire service planes, and they turn up in Iran, Afghanistan, Colombia, etc., full of cocaine and what have you. And so if anybody gets caught, they can just blame it on the U.S. fire service. So I would assume that if they're going to be using private commercial aircraft or military aircraft or something like that, there would have to be some kind of shell corporation in the mix in there for plausible deniability's sake.
I think that's true. In that particular type of scenario, there could be a number of scenarios here. I mean, you could have potentially, and based on a lot of the data we see, Project Cloverleaf, which appears to be an outline for using actual commercial carriers, without pilot or carrier personnel knowledge of this, which is feasible. It's possible that if there was automatically controlled, you know, GPS-controlled activation for the spraying, which is well within the realm of technology, then these carriers could be flying from point A to point B, and this apparatus used without anybody on the plane's direct knowledge. And Project Cloverleaf does seem to outline that. And we have now commercial pilots. There's a number of them starting to speak out that perhaps believe that, you know, their aircraft were even used for this without their knowledge. And, you know, we're not implicating commercial carrier pilots at all. But when we see letters from commercial carrier mechanics, which we do have out there that have been reprimanded, suspended for asking why they can't work on these particular mechanisms, I spoke to a man who said, and he, I believe, and be credible, that he worked on a retrofitting plant in Israel for these retrofitting of commercial aircraft into this program. So there could be so many different scenarios. People ask if some of these planes could be drone planes, and we know that technologies existed for a couple decades or more to fly the jumbo jets without pilots. We know they're flying drones in Afghanistan from pilots in Las Vegas. So it's hard to say a lot of those scenarios, but it appears that there are military and commercial aircraft being used. It makes sense. It provides cover for the geoengineering programs when they can say, look, this commercial aircraft's leaving the same thing, same trail, sort of a plausible deniability there. And it's a complex situation, but we know they're spraying. I mean, this material is coming down in absolutely copious amounts. It's in every lab test we take. Solar obscuration's off the charts. We have the dialogue about geoengineering in the scientific community now, Vincent, you've probably seen, is very extensive, and you have articles popping up all over. So, you know, it's the elephant in the room continues to dance about while the climate science community continues to remain in either denial or, in many cases, flat-out lying about it.
And tell us that the solution to all our climate woes is to tax every form of human activity and give it to the UN.
Some are saying the opposite now. There are some opposite reports. I don't know if you've seen, but UC Davis just put out a report, which we'll have up in a day or so, that exactly what we've said all along, exactly with the inclusion of all the study I've done and a number of others, that geoengineering not only isn't fixing anything, it can't fix anything, and it's only making everything exponentially worse. Now we have some peer-reviewed study to back that up.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Cure the disease, don't put a diseased Band-Aid on it. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest from geoengineeringwatch.org is Dane Wigington. Please go to the homepage there, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and check out some of our sponsors. Bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast primarily, so if you are capable of signing up for about $10 a month or $5 a month to support this broadcast, we'd very much appreciate it. You can either do it through PayPal, or if you happen to be living in the old Nazi land. I like that, actually, Nazi land. I almost want to elect somebody to rule me. Somebody who will take away my rights. Anyway, sorry about that. Just fantasizing for a moment there, ladies and gentlemen, of a better time than we have currently. Like a full-on honest dictatorship, you know. I'd like... I joke. Anyway, check out our sponsors, Blue Shield, Volcania, the books, The Crowdfunding Revolution, The Range of Illusion by B. Holmes, the High Tea Cafe specifically, and also the Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back.
Listen, damn it. You step outside, you risk your life. You take a drink of water. You risk your life. And nowadays you breathe and you risk your life. Every moment now, you don't have a choice. The only thing you can choose is what you're risking it for. Now, I can make these people feel better and hang on a little bit longer. I can save lives. That's reason enough to risk mine. And you know that.
Yeah, what'd you think of that, Dane?
That's the nail on the head.
Yeah, and that was a clip, ladies and gentlemen, from The Walking Dead. Welcome back, by the way, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. It's a listener-supported broadcast. And that clip that we played there, I think it was funny because you didn't know that I was going to be interviewing you today, and I had it down in our schedule. But I watched that episode of The Walking Dead last night, and it's an older one, but... it made me think of you, Dane.
Well, I certainly feel that way, and I'm hopeful that others begin to look through that lens, because we can accept what we face well or poorly, but we will accept it one way or the other. So why not make the most of whatever time we have for the common good?
Now, in terms of, like, risking your life, I mean, it's they're already on the line. Another quote from Alien 3 actually kind of fits in here. It's like, why should we risk our ass for you? Why should we put our ass on the line for you? Well, your ass is already on the line. The only question is, what are you going to do about it?
This is all of us. I mean, we're all on the end of the plank, and people who don't see it that way are simply not opening their eyes, so... If that's the case, why would we not stand and make our voice heard? Why would we march silently into the night? That's a poor choice. I won't make that choice, and I hope others choose to make their voice heard while they can, while they can.
Well, and I think part of the reason why we do this is so that people can be aware that they actually have a choice, right? I mean, if you have no information, what do you have to base your choice on?
People are certainly conditioned to feel they have absolutely no hand in whatever happens to them. And I would argue it couldn't be further from the truth. And in my dissertations, I try to point out, you know, and I do paint a grim picture, I know, and you've correctly pointed that out to me. It's my nature. I don't know any other way because that's what the data dictates. And I do feel like the Grim Reaper when I show up to do presentations. But at the end, I try to make abundantly clear the fact that anyone in that crowd, anyone listening, could be the pebble that causes the landslide of awakening. Any one of those people could be that element. All of us combined certainly could be that element. And it is starting to happen. And everybody has so much more power than they realize to affect this equation. Even at this late hour, if we could expose this one issue of climate engineering, Vincent, you know the shockwave it would cause around the globe, an absolute shockwave. I mean, it would change the dynamics. And yes, we still face unimaginable challenges. That's not going to go away. But if there's one thing we could accomplish at this late hour that would most change the flavor of what we face, I would argue climate engineering is it.
And on top of this, the elite and the military have been preparing for climate catastrophe for quite some time. And a number of whistleblowers have come out and revealed that there is a massive network of deep underground military bases. So one would think, or, you know, perhaps at least entertain the possibility that they're doing this on purpose to get rid of everything so that they can one day emerge victorious on a world that's theirs.
I know this conclusion is out there. I would argue that I don't think they bargained on what they bit off. They've bitten off much more than they could chew. And I certainly believe they would like to eliminate populations, but I don't think they planned on sinking the whole ship. And that's exactly what's happening right now. We'll see how the dominoes fall, and fall they are. They are, you know, this is already occurring. And yes, they're building the domes, the deep underground military bases. I just covered that issue in two presentations I did in Sacramento last week with photos of the moles. The moles are the massive tunnel boring machines that really have to be seen to be believed. They look like something out of a science fiction movie. They're enormous, and they are digging massive underground networks and digging in. But I would argue, again, if we stay on this track, it won't matter. There's no hole deep enough or well-stocked enough to sustain them for any significant length of time when we're looking at a planet, again, if we stay on this track, that at minimum would have a 10 to 20 million year equilibrium period if we compare it to past paleo events, and more likely is headed toward not sustaining any life. And it is that bad. And the things that are happening right now, let's look a few of the examples of what we see even today. And I'm doing an article on this right now. I was doing this as when you called this evening. We're having very severe hailstorms all over the U.S. Now, we know all the winter ice storms, the ice nucleation. You know, we had winter storms that originated in the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, people should know that's not right. You don't have subtropical moisture-making winter storms that have a warm side and a cold side with an ice storm transition in the middle. I mean, this is not possible without massive engineering. So what's happening right now with the hail? Now, we've had the start of the tornado season was the slowest in recorded history. Now, we've had some big outbreaks since, but why is it that slow? Because of the massive aerosolization, this canopy of white over all the convection, all the clouds. It limits the convection. It puts a ceiling on the convection. So you don't have convective clouds rising as high, but yet we're still getting this massive hail, massive hailstones. I don't know if you've seen much about this coverage down in your neck of the woods, Vincent, but even tonight, cars look like they've been hit with baseball bats, whole lots of, I mean, houses destroyed. How is this happening? Because they're chemically nucleating over this convection to cool the clouds down, to cool the ground down. And what does that do? It causes ice to form at higher temperatures and in much greater quantity than it otherwise would have. So it makes far more frequent hailstorms and far bigger hailstones. And that's exactly what we see happening. Same thing, Vincent, did you see in Lake Michigan, the 75-pound ice boulders? Did you see that?
Whoa.
Have you seen that?
No, man. No way.
Google it. you'll see photographs that'll shock you. It's only happened the last 3 years. The lake looks like it's full of these massive ice, perfectly spherical ice boulders. Now, you'd think people would wonder about this, and of course, the Rothschild's own weather channel tried to explain it away in 10 different ways, and this is from chemical ice nucleation. And once you start that nucleus, the material tends to form around it. And so we saw a phenomenon in the Great Lakes that was astounding. The Great Lakes froze over, of course, and the ice nucleation was a huge part of that. We just had the latest satellite recorded ice on one of the Great Lakes in history with temperatures of 85 degrees on the ground on the lake shore and lake water that's far above freezing. Now, how the hell do you still have ice there with those conditions? Because it's been chemically nucleated. So back to the hailstorms, back to the massive hailstones. All this is connected. So when they're nucleating these clouds, I'm sure you can conceptualize what I'm talking about. You start to cause this ice formation in the clouds that would not be there otherwise. And even though they're spraying over the top and limiting some of the convection, it still causes these massive hailstones, and it's doing a hell of a lot of damage, Vince. And so from that to the methane release, which is it's still ramping up right now. I mean, we're seeing temperatures all over the Arctic that are astronomically above normal. We're seeing India, you might not have seen a few days ago, hit temperatures of 120 degrees when they were supposed to be under monsoon. Did you hear anything about that?
No. See, I'm kind of like a rock in the middle of nowhere out here in New Zealand, Dane. Like,
a good spot.
It's not so much that I'm out of the way. I mean, I am out of the way, but I'm also out of community. I'm kind of like an avocado that refuses to talk back to you, you know, incommunicado. I'm not listening to mainstream media or listening to mainstream radio or anything because my radio in my car is busted and I don't have a TV. So I kind of really am in sort of like this this black hole of news, right? So every time somebody tells me something, it's news to me.
Well, you guys are a long way off the beaten path down there. I know that, but you know, you cover a lot of really important data. But the point I was going to get at is they entered what's called wet bulb syndrome. It's a term that maybe doesn't paint quite the clear picture. It's a scientific term. It happened the first time last year in China. It just happened again in India. What this term implies is this: when you get temperatures and humidity over a certain point, which has not occurred during all human history until last year, it's a range of conditions that's beyond the human organism to tolerate in many cases. And this is when you have temperatures of above 110 degrees with humidities over 50%, that can be a very lethal combination. Now, normally, historically, we didn't have that combination. When temperatures get to 110 degrees, humidity drops off. Now, we just saw in India, we hit wet bulb syndrome again, happened in China last year. We're seeing conditions that are quite astounding with temperatures.
I love the really foolish oversimplification of the explanations by mainstream climatologists and scientists to explain these things. I mean, look, this is their explanation for the massive ice boulders that are perfectly spherical all around Lake Michigan that are happening now and have never happened before. Oh, wow. There are enormous sheets of ice over Lake Michigan in winter. Chunks of the ice break off and grow layer by layer. You know, that's it.
And it's never happened historically, but it happens now. And this is that type of explanation you just outlined is what, for example, the Weather Channel meteorologists, and I use the term extremely loosely, that's what they're paid to say. They've done the same thing. I've seen them spend 5 minutes trying to explain why it's snowing at 45 degrees. And they, you know, how a man can stand there and lie for a paycheck, I don't know. I don't understand that. I couldn't do it. But they do, and that kind of incredibly simple and ludicrous explanation you just read is ridiculous. So, did you see a picture of those ice boulders?
Yeah, absolutely. They're freaking huge, a lot of them.
They are huge. And so, you know, when we see the...
In fact, Dane, I have an anecdote to share with you about my own personal ice boulder story. I used to live in Dunedin. It was like one of the coldest cities in New Zealand, and it snowed once while we were down there, and we made this massive snowball. It was huge. It was about half as tall as I am and just as round. And We only got about maybe 35 minutes of sunshine per day, and it was like right in the start of the day when the sun's at its weakest. So that ice boulder that we made that one time that it snowed was still on our front lawn about 6 months later. That was how cold it was for me.
If you're in a cold spot, you know, you can see that happening. But we're seeing it happen. For example, in Northern California, we had ice in the winter with pond water temps of about 40 degrees, nighttime lows about 40, daytime highs about 60. How do you have ice in a pond with those conditions? And it's chemically nucleated. And again, some of my articles, geoengineered snowstorms, what are they spraying? Two lab tests in that particular article showing just how powerful the chemical and biological nucleating agents are. Two very short 2-minute lab tests. And you can see when you mix in a beaker barium hydroxide and ammonium, drops temps in the beaker about 100 degrees. Biological nucleating agents into a vessel of water freezes it instantly. You can turn it upside down within about a second. So these agents are very powerful. We have the patents for them. Some of these patents go back to 1950. So they've been artificially chemically nucleating since at least 1950. We would think they've made a bit of progress in the last 64 years. And so when we see these phenomenon like these giant ice boulders and we see these hailstones that are hammering the hell out of everything, there's a reason for that. And we can see them chemically nucleating on a lot of the radar, Vincent. I mean, you see a band of rain flash out to frozen precipitation, for no acceptable reason. We know they're nucleating. We've done tests on the material, and the nucleating materials are in the precipitation. So, you know, 2 and 2 equals 4. It's that simple. But the back to the domes, back to the underground bases, back to the power structure having sunk the ship on which they depend, I do believe they had a lot of plans, as you outlined. I think that's accurate. But I would argue that they have far overreached their ability to handle the situation. And now it's completely off the rails, out of control. Wheels are turning that they can't shut off. No one can shut off. And now they're in a panic. And I think there's now a fraying of the power structure we're starting to see.
Yeah. Hubris does that. Apparently it happened in heaven once. Now, speaking of dumbs... You were talking about these reporters and how they could just tell you straight up lies for a paycheck. Well, I think partly it's not really having much information on the topic. And the other part is just being a straight moron, right? I mean, look at it this way. If you want to be able to talk directly to the American people, and you know for a fact that the education regime in America has more or less forced the majority of the population into a state of subtle moronity, wouldn't you want somebody who sounds and thinks a lot like them reporting the news to them? Oh, by the way, there's this extra blah, 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 blah. Some scientist said, oh, wow, a scientist said it? Sure, must be true. Because science has discovered that people will believe anything as long as you claim that scientists have discovered it.
Yeah, that's a really interesting part of our society, isn't it? And people, you'll hear them say, well, I'm no expert. So something that's completely glaring, like, for example, 50-story steel high-rise buildings coming down that never got hit by anything, and they have been so well-trained that they think they're not capable of rendering a incredibly straightforward, rational conclusion on the fact that that's not right because they're, quote, not an expert. So, you know, it's right now that conditioning of society is helping to continue our march straight over the cliff, and people better wake the hell up soon and start using their sense of reason and plugging it back in and exercising it, because we don't have a lot of time. The walls are closing in so incredibly quickly. Vincent, you've seen all the fish die-offs around the planet. You've seen that happening, perhaps?
Oh, yeah. Fish die-offs, shellfish. I saw one bit of footage from a guy walking on a beach in Pakistan in tears, just absolutely in tears. You can see this massive beach, as far as the eye can see, in both directions, covered with hundreds of millions of dead shellfish that had all just washed up one day.
That's, you know, they should be headlines in every paper, and we're following it pretty closely, and I did some posts on it already. But, and then, of course, we have the quote-unquote scientists the experts telling us they don't have any idea why this is happening, which is nonsense as well. So we have back to climate engineering. The roads lead back to climate engineering. The shredding of the ozone layer, disrupting of upper-level wind currents, which disrupts ocean currents. We have much more UV radiation hitting the planet now. That helps to heat the oceans. And again, there's a lot of causes for the damage done to the planet. It's not just climate engineering. I want to stress that. But that being said, the climate engineering, again, the biggest elephant in the room. So as this happens, you have the oceans are heating. They absolutely positively are heating. And the shredded ozone layer is helping them heat. So we have subsea gassing occurring. Methane, CH4, hydrogen sulfide is gassing. And so these anoxic zones are being created. That it just deoxygenates the water. As you have a large expulsion of this type of gas from the seafloor, and the fish go belly up. And that's you have water that's already carrying less oxygen. Warmer water carries much less oxygen than colder water. So you already have hypoxic zones happening, which are low oxygen, which once you have the additional burden of a gassing from the seafloor, you have an anoxic zone created, which is no oxygen. It's happening around the globe. It should be headlines on every paper. I mean, this is the speed at which our situation is unraveling cannot be overstated. And this is why the power structure is being so blatant with their actions in, for example, Ukraine and with other things they're doing, because they know all hell is about to really start breaking loose. You know, it already is, but our situation is unraveling very quickly. No question.
Yeah, and it does seem to be reflecting. It's like simultaneous collapse, like a convergence of many, many crises together simultaneously, with this one on top of it, you know, like the cherry on top, the one that's the biggest, the baddest, and the worst, has all these filter-down effects. But also, there's a number of other things that are happening at the same time. Like the, what was it you were just talking about? The gasification and the deoxygenation zones and what have you. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of these politicians that are full of hot air and noxious gas, turning all the policy that they implement into totally oxymorons, and then just like the fish, the economy and the country goes belly up.
Well, you know, it's certainly a parallel in a metaphoric sense, and the degree to which the public, though, is being completely distracted with the most meaningless things. And you watch the average commercial here in America, and it's designed for an intellect of, you know, maybe a 9 or 10-year-old or less.
It was 12 years old, according to the Harvard University, I think.
I think it's dropped. You know, I really do. I mean, no.
Well, remember inflation. Well, what they did is they did it for 12-year-olds back in the day, you know, maybe when they were like slightly more educated than they are today, whereas a 12-year-old today is about as educated as a 10-year-old was 10 years ago. Maybe that's an explanation.
It's probably the case given the Common Core stuff we have here. I mean, the stuff they're trying to teach the kids is quite astounding, and it doesn't really lead anywhere. It doesn't
the
really
Obama youth, I can assure you, it's leading somewhere.
Well, yeah, that's true. Nowhere constructive. But, you know, in the meantime, again, the people, you hear them, all the experts talking about, say, economic experts or so forth, they're talking about what's going to happen in 2020 or 2040. People need to understand that this is all complete fantasy. We're not going to get to anywhere near those points without a complete overturning of our paradigm. And I would argue, as you stated correctly earlier, and in the words of James Kunstler, we are facing converging catastrophes, and this is now. It's not off in the horizon. It's now. So as we have all these countries descending into chaos, we have resource depletion that's exponentially increasing by the day. We are, I would argue, close to the power structure becoming even more dangerous than they've been, even more desperate than they've ever been, and the immediacy of what we face is beyond what most people want to imagine. So it's time to wake up, time to join the fight, time to accept whatever people perceive as risk from that. A lot of people still, even at this point, they're afraid to join websites or make their voice heard because they're being monitored. You know, if you're sharing something that's for the common good, who the hell cares if you're monitored? I hope somebody's listening. I have a lot of interesting things happen in my phone calls of late, and I don't care. I hope the hell someone's listening. Maybe they'll learn something. Maybe they'll understand that we're trying to keep the boat afloat on which their children will depend also. It's an effort.
Now, there is a element that I wanted to discuss with you, specifically is the chemtrail trolls, chemtrail deniers, etc., all the various tactics that they use in order to derail argument, insults, and what have you. I mean, I'd like to hear some of your personal experiences and be able to elaborate so that it's kind of like when somebody tells you the characteristics of a psychopath, you know, like a really smiley person who's quite charming when you first meet them but doesn't really have any long-lasting relationships, doesn't care about anybody but themselves. You suddenly recognize that those attributes in every employer you've ever had, you know. Maybe you could elaborate on some of the attributes of these chemtrail deniers so that people can start to have a recognition for who these people really are and what their true objective is. But we'll leave that there just for the moment, and we'll go to a quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. This is a primarily listener-supported broadcast. We're in a bit of a financial spot this week. Need about another $220 to make the rent and expenses for this week. So if you could donate to either the PayPal or the Kiwi Bank account there, that would be very nice. Plus, check out our lovely sponsors, VulcaniaInternational.com, the Consciousness Coffee. They're donating all the proceeds from their global coffee operation to the People's Voice Network in the UK and the Vinnie Eastwood Show in New Zealand, showing that they are giving, for the first time ever, a new business model that is run by a business specifically to support activism and alternative media. So you can check that one out on the website as well. We'll be right back after the break with Dane Wigington.
Lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. Now I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and chemtrail geoengineering that nucleates the ice so that it has massive boulders the size of an elephantitis suffering man, you will go friggin' nuts if you don't have a sense of humor, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest, speaking of enormous big braveness, I was going to make some kind of a sexual reference there, but his name's Dane Wigington from geoengineeringwatch.org. Now, continuing on from what I was setting up in the last segment, Dane, I wanted to get your take and an explanation of some of the tactics, characteristics, etc. of these chemtrail deniers. And in many cases, one has to think that they're either playing directly to a script, meaning they're probably paid, or they're so mind-controlled that they actually think that they're doing the right thing?
I think it's all the above. I think you have people that will simply do whatever they're told if it provides any sort of income, and we absolutely know on a lot of different subjects that involve large corporations or power structures are where they're being exposed. They hire, this is routine, I mean, they hire legions of people to create havoc on the internet. I mean, there's no secrecy about that. So I think that category is certainly here. We have people being paid to be quote-unquote trolls. But we also have people who simply, I think, are in such fear over what they face. And I know a few people in this category, and they feel somehow if they can convince me that what's real isn't real, then they feel more assured in their denial. They feel that perhaps maybe their fear will go away if they can just convince me it's not real. And maybe that'll help them convince themselves it's not real. So I think we have people in all categories, because I know people, Vincent, here in the quote-unquote environmental movements who've been the most apathetic of all with the fight against climate engineering. It's astounding. From the head Sierra Club officer for Northern California, who's shown absolutely zero moral fortitude, to others that are, for example, trying to talk about climate change. And how big is this category? We have the entire scientific community, or the climate science community, talking about climate change without discussing climate engineering first. That's an illegitimate discussion. You can't discuss climate anything without discussing climate engineering first. So, and I know some of these people, and I know honestly they're simply afraid to face this issue, afraid for a lot of reasons, afraid that because others are afraid and don't want to talk about this, that they'll stand out, that they'll be ridiculed, or in other cases they're afraid to face this issue psychologically because it's just overwhelming. There's a lot of different reasons for the fear, but in regard to the trolls, those that make it their mission to argue whatever we say, and with any of these people, if we said the earth was round, they would set about convincing us that it's flat. So they take a contrary position no matter what, and I would argue this: it does not pay to argue with the trolls. That's what they feed on. That's what they want. They want engagement. They want attention. They want to somehow take up your time, and I won't do it. I absolutely won't do it. I mean, if there's someone who has a legitimate question on something, that's different. I'll definitely take time there. I do it with whatever time I can spare on Facebook, and with people who have legitimate questions, I try to answer, time permitting. I know I'm falling way behind right now because I'm just 12 hours a day is about half what I need, and I just can't keep up. But I do try to answer any sincere, legitimate questions or doubts. But those that are in the category of disinformation people or trolls, they're easy to spot. They're typically very, very aggressive. And we have a psychoanalysis. Vincent, I'm not sure you've seen, there's recent psychoanalysis that shows conclusively those who question, those who think outside the box, are clinically, psychologically speaking, much more sane than those who tenaciously and aggressively toe the official narrative. Have you seen those studies?
Sorry about that. I was just muted for a second. They were reported by major universities, I think, and what's his name? Dr. Kevin Barrett, who's a stalwart of the 9/11 truth movement, looked at this and found within his own studies, I believe it was upwards of 4,000 different websites and conversation threads and things of this nature, where they were analyzing the mentality, emotional mood, reasoning abilities, and intelligence of the participants, and they found overwhelmingly that those who toe the government line, as you said, are dumb, crazy, and aggressive. Right.
And they are. In fact, yeah.
And the opposite side of the spectrum, people like us, seem to be calm, reasoned, produce evidence and historical examples. And I think that's basically all I can remember of the study. But it is probably one of the most significant studies in terms of finding out who's right and wrong in an argument these days on an arbitrary basis. I mean, it used to be, oh, if he's not towing the government line and what have you, he must be wrong, he must be crazy. And now I think more closer to the opposite is true, that anybody who's toting the government line on virtually any topic is probably a bit nuts.
Well, you know, this is the actual fact. If we really look at, you know, hard evidence on things. And here, the study, I'll read the headline, new studies, conspiracy theorists, quote, sane, government dupes, crazy, hostile. First paragraph, recent studies by psychologists and social scientists in the U.S. and U.K. suggest that contrary to mainstream media stereotypes, those labeled, quote, conspiracy theorists appear to be saner than those who accept the official version of contested events. Well, you know, this is, I mean, again, when people can't recognize a building, like in the case of 9/11 being demoed in front of their face or brought down to the ground, and they believe that, in the case of Building 7, that a few fires in the first story brought the building down, you know, there's something seriously wrong with someone's ability to reason when we see that that sort of thing happening. The same with the spraying. I mean, it couldn't be more obvious, could it, really? I mean, we have grid patterns one day and nothing the next, and how can deductive reasoning not kick in? And in so many cases, it hasn't. But I again would argue that the walls are closing in by the day and that people won't have the option of staying in denial much longer. So why not step up to the plate, make your voice heard now, and see what you can yet affect in this equation? And people could if they simply realize that they do have a lot more power than they've been told. And they have to exercise it. They have to exercise it. And so many people are choosing not to do that. And we have tools, Vincent. I think we've talked about this before on your show, but it's just been updated. Tools like SkyderAlert.com. That app has just been updated. George Barnes at the head of that. And that's a great tool people can use. We try to be a tool on Geoengineering Watch with updated information as fast as we can get it up. And, you know, these should be utilized by people in their own home computer, can send this data out to all those who don't yet know. And as things unravel, people are going to start connecting those dots. They're not going to have a choice again. And if we've planted those seeds of awareness of what's happening around them, then they'll have something to go on as their world starts to unravel around them, which it's doing right now, by the way. So again, this is a fight that's going to take all of us, Vincent, if we're going to have a chance at changing direction.
Mm. And I would say as well, just to kind of back up, I'm not to belay the point here, but yeah, block the chemtrail deniers. If they're crazy, if they're abusing you, if they're showing you evidence that isn't relevant and they're giving you links to scientific documents that are 700 pages long and saying you need to read all of them in order to be able to argue your case, or you need to be an aeronautical engineer, or you need to da-da-da-da-da-da-da. If you've got common sense, you have more evidence than they will ever have in 1,000 years of academic study.
That's period. What it comes down to. I fully agree, and that's what our policy is too at Geoengineering Watch or on my Facebook pages. When someone's clearly simply trying to create arguments with irrational and really unsupportable ideologies and aggressive behavior, they're gone. I'm not going to waste my time. I don't want anybody on my pages wasting their time. And the best policy is do not feed the trolls when you recognize somebody in that category. Again, try to spot the sincere people that are asking sincere questions, and those should be answered. But those who are clearly just there to create dissension, who are clearly feeding off of that, they should be left to starve, period.
Yeah. And I have a great picture. I've gotten into the case of memes lately, Dane, and there's a great meme with SpongeBob. And it's SpongeBob, and he's got like his two hands as if they're creating a rainbow. And he goes, wah! He creates a rainbow with his hands from one hand to the other on the other side of his body. And it says, block, and the scum is gone. And
yeah, I wish, you know, that the... In the case of the climate engineering or anything that's of such gravity, the more progress you make, the more you can expect resistance, the more you can expect dogs to be called out. But that's all they are, little barking chihuahuas at our heels should be ignored, and people should just march on. And again, I don't think they can hide the climate engineering much longer, Vincent. Now, you guys are getting, what's your precipitation down your way? Are you getting anywhere near normal, or I haven't really taking a hard look at New Zealand?
You know, to be honest, I don't know. All I can do is from personal experience living in the same city for nearly 3 decades, it's colder than it normally is, and there's less rain than there normally is. That's for this for this time of year, and over the last maybe 20 years or so, not 20, maybe 15, 16 years, I've noticed that the seasons have kind of rotated a little bit. Like summer used to start around November, now summer starts around January. All the seasons are just as long, except it seems that they've shifted a month or two.
Well, the cooler temps and less precipitation, that fits with aerosolization of the clouds and the moisture, because as they do the same thing here, as the ice nucleate in the clouds, it can cause a cold layer to, you know, settle down. Cold air is dense. It comes down to the surface, but it does tend to diminish precipitation. Now, in the case of the U.S. West, in order to create enough cold air here for the parade of engineered snowstorms in the east, again, they've kept the high pressure locked in place over us most of the winter, so that we virtually fried all winter. In fact, the only cold we got here in Northern California, they pumped the jet stream right on top of us. They nucleated the hell out of the material. I mean, again, we tested with and found copious amounts of the elements we know are involved with ice nucleation in our precipitation. But we went from literally 75 degrees to temperatures, we went into only the high 20s, but plants that are normally hardy to 10 degrees got flash burnt. It's like a chemical cold flash burn. And it did a lot of damage to trees at temperatures that shouldn't have bothered them at all. And we're seeing the same type of flash damage, which this is what we'd expect. Again, I know you and I have discussed this issue before, Vincent. The 100,000 cattle that died in South Dakota last October, we've talked about that, I believe. And it's the same situation with those cows, where, you know, how can you possibly have 100,000 cattle die in South Dakota in October 4th, 2013, with temperatures in the 40-degree range and snow? Why is it snowing at 40? And how can it snow at any temperature when you have a stone throw away in Chicago, 85 degrees in rain? I captured all the maps. Otherwise, none of this data would mean anything if people couldn't see the proof. The proof is there. If people look up engineered snowstorms begin again, they'll see the maps, which are erased off the net now, but they're in that article. And again, they should ask themselves, their sense of reason, how could it possibly be cold enough to snow and kill 100,000 cattle in South Dakota on October 4th with temperatures in Chicago of 85 in rain, Kansas City 89 degrees or 90 degrees in rain? How is that possible? Because that chemical reaction against the hide of the cattle, just like I mentioned on the endothermic reacting materials, can be far below zero. I mean, they could be 20 or 30 degrees below zero on the moisture that's actually touching their hides. Kills the cattle, the temperature's out, you know, the ambient temperatures aren't that cold. It showed, there's pictures of several days after this event, cattle laying around the mud all over, dead, stone dead. And this is geoengineering at its worst. And we're seeing the same sorts of changes in seasons, as you mentioned, Vincent. And in our case, in Northern California, it's way hotter than normal. So where we see the cooler temperatures, a few places in the Southern Hemisphere, a few places in Antarctica, obviously some in New Zealand. In the Northern Hemisphere, we see the eastern half.
Well, we see that the changes are more pronounced in the United States. I would say that it's probably because the quantity of chemtrails being dumped on the Northern Hemisphere NATO countries is far superior to that being dumped in any of our Southern Hemisphere ones. I see pictures of crisscrossing patterns. I've seen long videos from people in, say, Copenhagen, who have just sat there for a whole day filming them, just chemtrail after chemtrail after chemtrail after chemtrail. It just makes this giant spider web. Never seen anything like that in New Zealand. At most, I've seen one at a time.
Really?
Over the urban area. We have reports from a friend of mine who was driving up to see me one time going through the middle of the North Island country, and he said that there were heavy, heavy spraying. He said multiple chemtrails out on there, but he didn't have any pictures, so I'm unable to confirm. And also, if the chemtrails have been sprayed just hours ago or whatever, it sometimes makes them a little bit more difficult to identify than the ones that are freshly laid.
It does, as they start to fan out, no question. That's interesting. You know, we certainly see days here, Vincent, where you might see 30, 40 parallel trails at once, which, again, back to the complacency of the American population, you know, how the hell can anybody not recognize that for what it?
Maybe it's a self-reinforcing feedback loop. When you've got a lot of aluminium in your bloodstream, lungs, and etc., it limits your thinking and capacity.
Certainly part of it, but we also see that if we look at 2,000 years ago in ancient Rome, as Rome burned, people were going to the Colosseum games and so forth, and there's always been an element of human apathy and complacency. But yeah, add aluminum, add fluoride, add a bunch of other things, and it gets a whole lot worse. But
well, back then they added lead.
Yeah, their drinking vessels were made out of lead. And that certainly didn't help the situation.
Hey, hold on a second. Maybe we've touched on to something that happens repeatedly throughout human history. The population goes from being rural, agricultural, family-based and whatever. It gets centralized. So does all the power and control and structure. Then the population gets dumbed down, poisoned. Then it collapses and they have to start all over again. Except,
well, you know,
with the exception at this point here is, of course, there won't be no starting over again. Ever.
If we stay on this track, that's exactly the case, and the data does support that. So what I was going to get at, I've been looking for a map I was going to ship you, but I'll have to look for it later. But the bottom line is, here's what we have on the ground surface temperature maps. Again, some cold zones in the southern hemisphere, near you, Antarctica, the eastern half of the North American continent. Beyond that, it's hot. It's hot all over. And Siberia started to burn in early April this year, regions that are normally frozen solid till mid-June, fire fronts, some of them a couple hundred miles wide. So we have a lot of things happening. We have a major El Nino brewing right now as they've held a high pressure over the west, which appeared to be to try to keep some of that heat buried in the ocean, which they appear to have successfully done for a couple of years. I don't know if you can call it a success in the full sense of the word. But that heat was building. You can only keep it down so long. Now that heat's coming out of the ocean in what looks like an unprecedented El Nino. So I think a lot of the confusion with people as to what the true state of the climate is and how much damage has been done, and again, so much of it by geoengineering itself, I think that's going to be clear to people very soon, because the manifestation of a lot of things, and most specifically these programs, is really starting to rear its head. And I think the coming weeks and months are going to be very revealing to people. And again, the fight that's going on right now with the Obama regime trying to talk about climate in many ways and still omitting the elephant in the room of climate engineering, we're trying hard to cure that. Because, again, as I said, you can't have a discussion about climate without talking about climate engineering first. Can't do it. Not legitimately.
And that's how the game is played, really. Oh, this is really damaging to us. Let's just omit that.
Yeah. And at this point, though, it's causing a lot of...
It's like conflict. Did you ever watch The Muppets as a kid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did a bit. Yeah.
So, like, I think what's happening now is instead of Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy... the Muppets are actually the politicians and the scientific reporters and stuff like that, and so they're just kind of, you know, comet defraud, more like.
I mean, trying to get your arms around it, and I struggle with this a lot, that you have tens of thousands of people in academia and really the climate science related area, none of which seem to have enough spine to tell the truth right now. And that's an incredibly dismal statement for humanity. And let's look at the nuclear issue. I mean, we know we have Fukushima, 3 reactors in China syndrome right now, and yet there's almost no data on that. And the vast majority of people around the globe, even a lot of people in Japan, are oblivious to the fact that this is a spewing nuclear volcano with no end in sight, and it's completely ignored. And then they slate Tokyo for the next round of Olympics with Fukushima right there. The degree of human insanity is beyond comprehension. At the same time, we have this nuclear cataclysm unfolding. Obama is slated $6.5 billion for building more new plants in Georgia. So it's astounding, truly, what's happening right now and on planet Earth, and the complacency of the population is astounding.
The words of Alec Guinness on Star Wars spring to mind as Obi-Wan Kenobi. Who's the bigger fool, the fool or the fool who follows him?
That's a great quote, too. I got to write some of these down, Vincent. I don't laugh much, and you make me laugh. But anyway, these are great quotes, and they're you know, it's very telling of what we face right now. But I think as certain things can't be fit under the rug, and we have right now, I know this is greatly controversial, but I will stand my ground in this because this is what the data states. A lot of people believe, for example, that the Arctic ice is expanding. This is a lie. It's an absolute lie. And as of today, it's at all-time record lows. Why does this matter? Because at the moment, they can't hide that. At the moment, the lies, for example, of last September, when people were told the ice had expanded tremendously and that everything was recovering, at the point in time that becomes visible, at the point in time people get over the fact that we all hate Al Gore, myself included, at the point in time people realize that somebody has lied. When if the Arctic ice is gone, the summer ice, within the next year or two, people will know that somebody's been doing a lot of lying. And I think that will help expose the climate engineering. Once the climate engineering is exposed, I believe that the power structure, once it gets even close to that point, the power structure is going to do something, Vincent, I believe. And whether that's a false flag or something in that category, we can all speculate. But I would argue they're going to drop some shoe. And Vincent, I'm sure you saw that the USDA was authorizing 40 caliber submachine guns.
None?
Yeah, well, it's posted on our site. I looked at the USDA site myself. You know that Homeland Security ordered 2.2 billion rounds of 40 caliber hollow point, right?
I think it was something like that, closer to 1.4 billion or something like that, which is approximately 3 hollow point rounds, which kill everybody that gets shot with them because they splinter and fragment. They're actually illegal under the Geneva Conventions, for every man, woman, and child in the United States.
That was the initial order, 1.4 billion.
And actually, that was also in tandem with another order for, I think it was a number of millions of targets in the shapes of children, babies, pregnant women, and the elderly.
All that was documented, and I think the total combined orders were, it's pushed up to 2.2 billion rounds. Now, the USDA orders, and this is posted on our website and others, but USDA authorized the acquisition of 40 caliber submachine guns for their employees if they met the requirements and felt it was needed. So here we have people that are basically agricultural inspectors. Why do they need machine guns? And this, all these things should be massive red flags for the American population. I mean, this is the power structure becoming more desperate for all the reasons I just outlined. There's from every direction, there's converging catastrophes that will help expose them. The climate situation is one that certainly will help expose the power structure. And I would argue, back to climate engineering, the moment that's exposed, the whole paradigm changes. The moment the population realizes they've all been sprayed like rats, their health is permanently compromised. I don't care how healthy you think you are right now, you're not as healthy as you would have been. Plain and simple fact. We've all been exposed to this stuff, and there's no getting it out of our systems completely, period. The environment's been horribly hammered. The ozone layer is falling apart. And again, if the spraying doesn't stop for any one of a number of reasons, from the methane expulsion to the ozone, it's game over on planet Earth. It's that simple. Any one of these issues, no ozone layer, no life on Earth. The methane expulsion continues to any significant degree, no life on Earth. The oceans are dying. If they continue in that track, no life on Earth. So from a lot of different directions, the walls are definitely closing in, and the climate engineering is, there's no question about this, Vincent. The climate engineering has derailed the planet's life support systems, period. It's rendering the very thin layers of atmosphere that sustain life on Earth dysfunctional, and that all links to the overall life support systems being completely hijacked. Can't continue much longer. Simply,
which
can't.
Is ironically why we need to pull the plug on these programs and go to a break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Dane Wigington with more cheerful and encouraging information.
We'll finish on a positive note, though, for your listeners, so they know what they can do if they really want to change direction.
If you say so, we'll be right back, folks.
You see Dr. Wen in there? He's explaining to that family that something went wrong and that the patient died. He's going to tell them what happened, he's going to say he's sorry, and then he's going back to work. You think anybody else in that room's going back to work today? And that is why we distance ourselves. That's why we make jokes. We don't do it because it's fun. We do it so we can get by. And sometimes because it's fun. But mostly it's the getting by thing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with the Y, because it's the most important question. Eastwood, as in go ahead, make my news. And I do think that we need to be cognizant, ladies and gentlemen, of the importance of this show. Not to toot my own trumpet per se, but just more to the fact that it is one of the ways where you can ingest this very valuable, very dangerous, very volatile, very depressing information without experiencing quite the fear factor that you ordinarily would, because it's broken up with incredibly lame puns and other more commonplace super case. So Dane Wigington from geoengineeringwatch.org is my very special guest, and we're going to try and leave this on a positive note. So Dane, tell us how we're all going to die and how great it is.
Positive is an objective term, and we'll have to frame that in a certain way, Vincent. But the bottom line is, if people imagine a certain paradigm and they're stuck on that paradigm, then that always leads to angst, right? I mean, all the ancient traditions teach that if we're locked into a certain ending or a certain result from anything we do, That's never a good frame of mind to be in. And I would argue that whatever we face, and we face great challenges, that the more committed we are to facing those, then the better state of mind we'll be in. No question about that. And right now is the time where people find out what they're made of, truly, what sort of moral fiber they have, if you will. So if people simply faced this issue with a sense of priority and a sense of mission, I think that the fear leaves one largely, and if you just accept the totality of what's around you and don't try to filter it and just focus on moving the ball forward every single day. When I get up, Vincent, and I've said this a lot because it's truly how I feel. It's like waking up into a B horror movie that you just can't turn off. You know, the channel's stuck, and you see this stuff going on around you, and a lot of people that are in your circle don't, but nevertheless, you know it's real, you know it's going on, and you know the results will be so cataclysmic soon enough that they can't ignore it. So in the meantime, what do? You sow seeds. And this has been the case with a lot of people that I've introduced this subject to, and I don't know if you can take this as a good thing to say, but I do. They come up 6 months later and tell me that they thought I was nuts to begin with, but they realize this is going on, and now they're passing out DVDs and flyers. They're helping. They're woken up. And I would argue, too, that the effort to wake people up matters in and of itself, doesn't it? I mean, for every person we help to expand their consciousness, expand their field of vision, doesn't that have to matter by itself? For me, it does. If all my efforts added up to waking up one person, I would feel the effort was not in vain, was worthwhile. But, in fact, if we all wake up, no matter how dark the horizon is, and it's damn dark, there's no arguing that. You know, from Fukushima to the coming economic collapse, which is absolutely inevitable, it's close. The whole societal system is like a snake eating its own tail right now. But no matter how bad it looks, if everybody really is helped to wake up, you know, given the tools to force them to wake up, then we could change the flavor of what we face, even at this late hour. If we could stop the climate engineering, the Earth could respond on its own. The hydrological cycle could ensue. Rain would be ferocious in places. And I know that's not good all the time, but overall, that's what makes things grow. When things grow, they absorb carbon. When carbon's absorbed, it starts to regain the planet's equilibrium again. And when the ozone layer is allowed to restore itself, we don't have this literally lethal UV bearing down on us, which is killing everything from us to the plankton. So people can do a tremendous amount. They don't have to go out into marches or attend meetings, or they can simply learn about what's going on. And they should learn, because a lot of people in our movement stopped learning a while back. They have conclusions based on preconceptions and ideology, and that's not an accurate compass heading. It's not. You have to reset your heading often based on new data, based on what's happening on the ground. So if people spent the time and focused on this and weren't trying to fit it in between golf games and episodes of American Idol, we'd be in a lot better shape, and we'd have this battle a lot further along. So I hope people consider their priorities, help us in this fight, turn off those Muppets shows that we talked about, and start making their voice heard.
Yeah, that's right. Don't commit to fraud. Don't watch the Muppet Show no more. I just remember, there's an old saying, the key to happiness is really, really low expectations. And I was talking about, somebody was telling me, oh, Vinny, don't go out and protest chemtrails, you know, there's no point, you'll never accomplish anything. And you go, well, it depends what you hope to accomplish, okay? So if you're telling me don't go out and protest because it won't accomplish anything, and meanwhile what you're doing is not protesting or anything but simply discouraging people to do it, and you're actually still sitting at home doing nothing, who's going to accomplish more? Me, who organizes, goes to the protest, films it, uploads it to YouTube, and interviews people that are of this a particular ilk and raising the issue, and having that available for public consumption when no other outlet in New Zealand does it in that format, in that way, I think, regardless of what the protest itself accomplishes, simply acknowledging that the protest happened and putting out the information that was said at said protest is an accomplishment in and of itself that is worth doing, worth going to, worth recording, and worth uploading, right? Because it actually does make a difference. Because one person who'd be watching this would also think, as the previous person did, oh, the protest accomplished nothing. But then they get encouraged by seeing people who, despite the fact that protests may not accomplish anything in and of themselves, they still go and do it anyway. And they meet up with all these really nice, friendly, cool, like-minded people that, in many cases, they make long-term friendships with, as opposed to sitting at home, alone, unhappy and upset about the things that are going down that you're doing nothing in any way to stop. Now, people don't wake up in that format. You don't really wake up until you become activated, woken up. And I feel that a lot of the bulk of my listening audience are not quite at that activated sense yet. Have you decided to quit your job and go out be a full-time activist like I did, or like so many others have in the truth movement? Because their moral compulsion made them do it. They couldn't see a way out except to do the right thing. Has that happened to you yet? If the answer is no, you have yet to wake up. I'm not trying to wake you up. I'm trying to make sure that you don't go back to sleep. I'm trying to help you realize that there is a cup of coffee waiting for you as soon as you decide to get out of bed and go to work against the New World Order. There are people that will encourage you along the way. There is always a way. Always.
There is, and doing the right thing should matter because it's the right thing to do. Period. Period. I mean, what other foundational piece can you build on? And it does matter anyway. For every person we wake up, it matters. And those that are going about their job right now, Vincent, thinking they're planning for some retirement in 5 years or 10 years, and they don't want to rock their boat, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. If we look at the trajectories right now, again, of just the global economic system, the fact that the major car companies are buying their own cars, there's massive car lots around the globe loaded with unsold brand new cars that they just keep stacking up in order to keep the wheels turning with printed Fed fiat money or central bank money. This is fact. I just posted an article on this. I'm not sure. Have you seen the pictures of the massive, massive car lots?
I did. The millions of cars that are like brand new that they basically they can't sell because they're too expensive, and they won't sell them at a cheaper rate because they wouldn't be able to sell them at an expensive rate in the first place. So what do? They have millions of cars which people could be using to facilitate commerce and transport around the entire world. You know, you can imagine how many villages and things of that nature in disparate parts of the world that could really, really benefit from having a Land Rover of their own that they didn't really have to pay for. And considering these guys are just letting all this stuff literally go to rust, I reckon a great charity could be facilitated whereby they simply provide the free vehicles as long as somebody else transport them to people in need in parts of the world that don't currently have vehicles to do that kind of thing for them.
Well, you know, there's no plans to do anything like that. And even if they did, you know, there's a lot more elements to the equation. I mean, you have a decrease in hydrofuel extraction right now. I mean, right now the turn of the century, 1900, we had one barrel of oil could extract 100 out of the ground. Now it's 1 in 7. In America, you have this huge fracking boom, which they're trying to scatter around the country, which is a total disaster. And the fracking wells taper off very quickly. It's all smoke and mirrors, absolute smoke and mirrors. So it's like every single card is being played to try to keep this facade going a little bit longer at the cost of eliminating any chance for a future for anyone. So, you know, people need to wake up, look at the bigger picture, and accept certain realities. And I don't think it's a sign of one loving one's child when and I know people like this who they want the party to go on no matter what. If they can keep their consumptive lifestyle and their denial of climate engineering and their head in the sand 6 more months at the cost of their children's future, they're okay with that. Or it seems they're okay. They're acting like they're okay because they're not doing a damn thing to protect their kid's future. And I asked, how can you look your child in the eye? How can anyone look their child in the eye and sit the bench on climate engineering, which is literally poisoning every breath your child takes? How is that possible? How is it possible to say you love your child when you can go watch them play games or soccer outside or whatever they're doing, knowing every breath they take is laden with toxic metals and chemicals, and you're doing nothing about it? How is that an expression of love for your child?
I had a conversation like this about somebody, and they're like, oh, about cancer specifically. He says, well, everything causes cancer, you know, there's no worry. And I said, yeah, but just because, let's say, death is inevitable, I don't see people who have that same fatalistic perspective rushing to put their mouth on the end of a revolver, okay? Just because things are bad and things are coming down on you, whether you like it or not, doesn't mean you should charge headlong into them and try and consume as much as you possibly can to facilitate your death faster.
Fully agreed. And just, you know, that's just a person's excuse for their lack of moral fortitude and responsibility. Because if you love your child, you don't look the other way on an issue like this. You can't. And I can only hope a lot of people start to take a good hard look in the mirror, because if they do, they're not going to like what they see. And the people that are just rationalizing their selves out of taking any position in such a dire fight on which all depends, there's no excuse for that, simply no excuse. So people need to wake up, step up, join the fight. And again, from anybody's location, you don't need to go anywhere or attend anything necessarily at all. Just learn some basic facts so you're not shooting from the hip. Arm yourself with credible data. On Geoengineering Watch, we have links on the upper left. One's called Activist Suggestions. One's called a Flaming Arrow link, which has a pre-packaged message, intro letter, and also other important links in it that you can send out to anybody whose email you identify. I do this all the time, Vincent, where when I see, for example, a hard-hitting article on the climate, and there's lots of those right now, lots. You know, you saw the article that the West Antarctic ice sheet was collapsing, right? You probably saw that, 15 feet of sea level rise locked in, blah, blah, blah. When I see people writing about the climate and they're not mentioning climate engineering, I try to find a contact for them and ask them why they're not addressing the elephant in the room of climate change.
Oh, my God. How can they... You have the same exact approach to, that I do to people who talk about city planning and things like that and don't mention Agenda 21.
There you go. You know, the bottom line is there's a lot of lying by omission going on, and I try to hold these people accountable. And that's, again, our site, disinformationdirectory.com, to expose people that, in fact, it just had a big report written. Somebody must have been paid a fair amount for this one out of the UK by a PhD. Geoengineering Watch made the top of the list for their singling out of those who were focused on the, quote, conspiracy theory of climate engineering. So I guess that means we're on track and doing our job. This lady, clearly, she mentioned conspiracy theory 150 times in this piece. And
oh, yeah. You know, whenever they repeat it over and over again, you know they're full of crap, eh?
They are, but we actually found a photo of her. Looks like a mugshot. It's up on our disinformation directory with her email, so the public can let her know what they think of her disinformation. But nothing linked to any source of her work per se that would allow her to spread her disinformation. But to expose her as a person in this case, you know, we felt was, or the disinformation site has done this. And so some of these people, like in the case of David Keith, for example, I just did a article, just posted about an hour ago on him. A lot of people in this movement know who David Keith is. He's the world's most recognized geoengineer, and he's out trying to do some conditioning for the public. Keith is a very twisted individual. I mean, I've had the displeasure of meeting him and his glaring at me for 15 minutes when he put his leg down his mouth in the science conference that I attended in L.A. that's on film. It's on this article, too. The film clips are on this article of David Keith basically admitting that they've done no studies about aluminum. Could terrible things happen tomorrow? We don't know. What kind of a statement is that from a scientist who's proposing dumping 20 million tons of this stuff in the atmosphere every year? Gee, we don't know. Bad things could happen. We don't have a clue. And, you know, this should give an idea to people of the cavalierness with which all this stuff's done. The power structure doesn't have to answer to anybody. People ask why, you know, why are they doing this? Because they can. Because they can. Because nobody is getting up off their backside to stop them. You know, and this is what it's going to take. The population is going to have to realize the water's coming over the deck of the ship right now. It's around our ankles. And it's not just going to magically go away. We have to get up, make our voice heard, and turn this thing around. It's going to take every single one of us. Not going to happen by itself.
Yeah. I think it's commitment, you know. My grandfather... was once asked by my sister, you know, why did you marry Nanny? And they worked at a mental institution together as a pair of nurses. And he says to her, well, when you're working in a mental institution, it's all about commitment.
Well, and
this is what I feel is probably the driving force behind resistance is simply commitment to cause. The whole no, sorry, not going to be discouraged. I know that I'm correct. I know that I'm doing the right thing. I have the evidence and you don't. And I know that you're lying and I can prove it. So you think I'm going to be discouraged? You think I'm going to just like sit back and watch you deceive the population? Carte blanche. Think I'm just gonna think. Oh, you know what? I'm just gonna have a martini today and sit back and enjoy life while I'm getting sprayed by chemtrails and not think about the consequences of my inaction. You know, people are so afraid of the consequences of their actions. I fear more the consequences of inaction. Don't you, Dane?
Exactly. And why did Snowden do what he did? I mean, I just saw a reiteration of this today on the news that what Snowden said was, you know, he was not so much afraid of the consequences of his actions of the fact that he couldn't face himself if he didn't do this. He couldn't sleep at night. And that's the epitome of human existence. If a person can reach that point where doing something for the common good matters more than anything else, than your own fears. And when a person gets to the point where they realize everything in their world can be taken from them, except their honor, except the correct use of their own will, period. What else could matter more? What else could could give a person more inner courage than doing the right thing, period, for the right reason. And I, again, Vincent, this is the time when we all find out what we're made of. This stuff isn't going to magically go away. Shoving your head in the sand is not going to change it. But standing up and making your voice heard might make a difference. So, again, right now, if anybody in your audience wants to help the situation, I encourage you, learn what's going on, look at the bigger picture. We're trying to post also, even though Geoengineering Watch, I focus on the climate engineering exclusively, but there are other issues that do connect and do matter. Fukushima, what's happening in Ukraine, there are huge issues that we post on as well, on the most key points, so people can have some idea of the bigger picture, how it fits together, and the more clue they have, the more effective they'll be at communicating with others. And if people simply focus their efforts and didn't try to live this sort of facade life while the house is crumbling around them, they'd be a lot more effective. Focus on the obvious priority. Let the other things go. Join us in this march. We need people. I spoke at the March Against Monsanto, by the way, in San Francisco a week and a half ago. And with those people there, and the GMO issue is a big deal. It matters. But it doesn't matter as much as climate engineering. That's a fact. And I'm not choosing climate engineering because it's more comfortable for me or I just like it more. The bottom line is the greater priority. So if the planet doesn't support life, GMO foods aren't going to matter much. And I hope the people in that movement, and I care for their cause, I do, but I hope that they prioritize with us and that if we don't have any organic anything at this point because they're absorbing the particulates from the spraying, then we need to stop the spraying first. If the soil won't produce anything but a GMO seed, then we need to stop the spraying first. If every breath we take, we're sucking this stuff in and it's making us cognitively less functional, then we need to stop the spraying first. If it's helping to migrate the Fukushima radiation all over the planet more effectively because it's disrupting the hydrological cycle, we need to stop the spraying first. All these things stack up to an obvious priority. And I hope people in the more activist communities start to work together in this way and not infighting. And we see on the end of the collective insanity, they work like ants. They just work together like absolute ants and toward their goals of the kinds of things they do. You know, they tend not to go different directions like the more progressive communities do. They tend to go, they're just like getting butterflies to go the same direction. It's tough, but I hope that changes.
Like a military employed disinformation agents on the media, you know.
Hello, this is Butch Meathook. This is Butch Meathook here. Lies and omission is my mission.
And they are right.
Yeah. Let's look at the media. How coordinated are they? I mean, they're completely coordinated. You turn on every station, same message. It doesn't matter. You're on CNN. You're on Fox. You're on MSNBC. Same message. Same time of day for the same duration. It's almost
with the exact same words.
Exactly. The same dog and pony shows all the time. And then you have, again, people like Amy Goodman. I don't know if you know who she is.
Oh, yeah. Democracy Now.
You know what? And I can't imagine how she can face herself in the mirror anymore. And I've met her twice. I supported her show once upon a time. I mean, at great personal financial expense. But now I know people who work with her. I know she's been hijacked by the Ford Foundation. She won't talk about 9/11. She sure as hell won't talk about geoengineering. And so what kind of message is she giving? You know, and how does she convince herself that she's telling the truth when she's telling a half-truth? So, you know, it's all or nothing.
Can I say, I was out drinking at a friend's party last weekend, and one of my listeners and donors was there, and he asked me, Vinny, if somebody came up to you and offered you, say, $100 million to just stop doing what you're doing, would you do it? And I said, yeah, absolutely. I'd take the money and then I'd give like $1 million to this group over here that needs some financing and that group over there. And he's like, no. With a specific clause in the contract that if you take the money and you bow out, you bow out for good. You don't support anybody in the truth movement. You totally get away with it altogether. $100 million, yes or no? Thought about it for like 2 seconds. I was like, I can't. I couldn't, you know, I mean, it's like, what the hell use is $100 million if you're freaking dead? You know, I didn't, I couldn't see myself ever taking that offer, even if it's for real. You know, this isn't me just going on about frickin' nonsense. However, there is the other proviso: if I was forced into it, if I was forced to take the money or die, kind of thing. I think probably self-preservation might kick in, because what use is not taking the money if you're dead? You know, it's like it's such a hard thing to think about. But at the end of the day, I just couldn't do it. You know, the consequence is too high. Now,
as I said, this is the time when we find out what we're made of, and that clearly states what you're made of. And if people let go of what they are trying to value, all this material facade that's around them, and they examine what matters, and they look in their child's eyes, they look at themselves in the mirror, figure out what really matters, figure out what they really own. All they own is their honor. That's it. Nothing else. Everything else can be taken, and nobody can take that from us unless we give it up. Don't give it up. You know, stand up, join the fight, and see exactly what you can affect, even at this late date, at this late hour.
By all means, ladies and gentlemen, maintain your independence, okay? It's a two-step process. Firstly, you've got to make sure that you're not dependent on anyone else so that you can do the right thing. And secondly, if you see other people that really can't do something by themselves, but it's nothing to you, like it's real easy, help them. And then when something comes across you that you're kind of unable to deal with, somebody will help you. And that's how the activism scene kind of works, all right? That's how networking is supposed to function. It's a two-step program. You've got to meet people that are good for you, and you've got to also hook up your other acquaintances and networks together if they will work well. You know what I'm saying? You've got to take some obligation. You've got to have some sense of community, some sense of longevity, some sense of honor among each other in a time of perpetual deceit and dishonor. That in and of itself will change the system in a ripple effect way that you cannot perceive the results. How many ways are the New World Order enslaving you? Every single way possible. So how many ways are there to resist the New World Order? Any way you can. Thank you very much, Dane Wigginton. Geoengineeringwatch.org is his website. Also, ladies and gentlemen, bear in mind, again, a reminder, this is a bulk listener-supported broadcast, so please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and make a donation today, either through the PayPal or the Kiwi Bank accounts. We do very much value those people who give regularly, the $5 or $10 a month, to keep the show on the air on a perpetual basis. It's been really helpful recently, but unfortunately we don't quite have enough coin to make the rent this week. So I hope that I can rely on your support, and in 5 years I've always been able to, and I don't think this will be an exception. Love you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for supporting me, and thank you, Dane, for coming on and sharing some of your valuable time, wisdom, and all those other things that you love to do.
Thank you, Vincent. Thanks for all you do, and let's all keep marching together and realize time is short. We need to make our time count. Every day matters.
We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Think on it. Think on it, hon.